Good morning, CHD. Welcome to Pediatric Perspectives, where we are looking at children's health challenges from a different perspective, one that includes critical thinking and one where we're not afraid to give you the honest truth. We are very fortunate today. I am bringing back special guest, Dr. Suzanne Humphreys. Dr. Humphreys, thank you so much for coming back on the show and giving us of your time.
Thank you for having me.
Those of you who maybe missed the last show, you can certainly go back and look at it. Dr. Humphreys is the author of a very important book, Dissolving Illusions, with a new edition that is magnificent. You've just got to get your hands on this. And I would say one of my real heroes in this world of understanding vaccines, understanding health, what it takes to be healthy. So what we're going to do today is focus a little bit on that. Children's Health Defense has put out a Parent's Guide to Healthy Children, from preconception to early childhood. And periodically on this show, we touch on different parts of that book. Today, we're going to focus a little bit on developmental milestones. That's in chapter 6. But with Dr. Humphreys as my expert today, we will certainly do a deep dive into vaccines, the ingredients, the toxic nature of vaccines, and how that impacts child development and child's health. So to pick up a little bit on where we left off, Dr. Humphreys, you mentioned, and I've experienced the same thing, that you saw a difference between the health of unvaccinated children and the health of those who are highly vaccinated. Can you elaborate a little bit more about that?
Sure. Well, you know, just so I don't insult anybody, we can use me as an example. So when I was a child, I was moderately vaccinated, okay? And I would say I probably didn't get my first vaccine until going into kindergarten. And I think you're around 5 years old then. And so that's probably when I would have got a measles shot, because I don't think it was full MMR at that point. And I would, because in America, that's, you know, the rest of the world was a little more delayed. And I would have got probably the old DPT shot. And I wasn't that sick up until I was 5 years old. But man, after 5 years old, I spent most of my childhood and teenage years on and off of antibiotics with, you know, ear infections, throat infections. I remember having some of the worst, most horrible throat infections. I remember laying on a pillow one day, and my mother was giving me eardrops, and all of a sudden I heard a pop and all this fluid came out of my ear. Now, we don't let kids have that happen anymore. But if you just look at our generation, like, we were pretty sick as kids. And now what I've, since I've woken up and I've had the opportunity and the honor, I should say, to meet so many families who stop vaccinating their children, and maybe they have one child, usually one child. This is what I find. It's either a child or a pet that experiences a vaccine injury. And then the parents start doing some reading and they run into our information, which is why they don't want our information out there, because it's part of what makes kind of that crack in the windshield, so to speak, enlarge. And then they stop vaccinating, and they start noticing, A, that the child or the pet that they stopped vaccinating on has an improvement in their health, and that their subsequent children just don't have the kind of problems that the rest of the childhood population that's getting vaccinated has. And then, gosh, I probably know, have known 1,000 non-vaccinated children now. And I now know a family that's got two generations, probably 19 or 20 between children and grandchildren. None of them have been vaccinated except the oldest child, who just had an adverse reaction to the MMR. And you see these kids, and it's like you're on a different planet. So that's my experience with the vaccinated versus the unvaccinated. And yeah. I imagine that you have similar, because you had seen a lot more of them, whereas I only saw it from a social perspective. I didn't see it from a medical perspective. Although I do remember I had to do 6 weeks pediatric rotation at Children's Hospital in Philadelphia. And I remember just prescribing so many antibiotics. And I remember saying to one of my colleagues, gosh, children are so sick. There must have been massive death before antibiotics were invented. And, you know, because I didn't know the full picture that of what was going on before antibiotics were invented. But I just thought, how did humanity survive this long? Because they're literally dependent upon antibiotics. And it was, that's why it was a real revelation to me to meet children who had never had an antibiotic in their life.
Yeah. No. So I was in Africa growing up in the 60s. I was born in the 50s. And I think I got two vaccines. There was a World Health Organization campaign. They came through the village we were living in. And I'm sure we got smallpox back then and a TB shot, what they did back then, the BCG. And that was it. But I was healthy, didn't know anybody with neurodevelopmental challenges, never had antibiotics as a kid. And compare that to my children who lived on antibiotics, the same story you shared. It's sick all the time. So I've also had families in my practice, up to about 1,000 of them over the years, who were not vaccinating. Same story. A lot of them had initial child injured from vaccines, woke up due to that, decided, nope, we're not doing this for our subsequent children. And their subsequent children were just the healthiest ever. So this is something I think if you're watching and you're afraid of these diseases for which we have vaccines, there's an interesting phenomenon if you're not vaccinated. And Dr. Humphries, maybe you can touch on this. What's going on with their immune systems that they're not getting sick? These unvaccinated kids.
Yeah, well, that requires a book in and of itself. But so you have to understand. And so one of the first things that I had to do as an adult nephrologist was track and understand what vaccines do to the immune system, what kind of programming happens there, how long it lasts, and what parts of the immune system are affected, and what's actually in the vaccines to have that effect. So, you know, I know you're aware of this because I have read your book, and I know you're aware of the massive amounts of aluminum that are in the childhood vaccine schedule. And if you understand how aluminum, why it's in the vaccines in the first place, is because the vaccines would do almost nothing if it wasn't in there. It's an irritant to the immune system to get it activated. The problem is that it activates the immune system in the wrong direction. So you can have a vaccine which could potentially protect you against the lineage or strain of whatever microbe you were vaccinated against. But when you encounter that in real life, say you encounter that same microbe, your body was programmed through an injection into a muscle, into the blood, which is not the same way it would normally come into your body, which would be through your nose and your throat and your lungs and through a gated system. I think all criminals have to confess. And in 2022, Anthony Fauci and colleagues wrote an article essentially describing this to a T and saying how ineffective the flu vaccines have been, how ineffective many of the other injectables have been, and that they, if they were held to the same standards that say the measles vaccine was held to, that they wouldn't be marketable. Now, even when it comes to the measles vaccine, it doesn't come into the body the right way. So not only have you given an aluminum-containing vaccine, which skews the immune system towards the antibody formation, it's very complicated, and I'm very much oversimplifying it, but it skews the body in a way that it's not going to give a full, rounded, effective response in real life. That's number one. Number two, it's only programming it against certain aspects of the microbe, unless you have a live viral vaccine, which is why the measles vaccine is a more effective vaccine. So if you've got a particle or a subunit vaccine with aluminum, and you take that in the body in the wrong way, which is injected, so you're not getting the immunity, mucosal immunity, which has been very, and I go into this in the pertussis chapter in the new Dissolving Illusions 10th anniversary edition, because there's all this new research showing the difference between the lung surface immune system, which has its own immune system, very different to what's in the blood.
Yeah.
And so you're stimulating that the blood immune system, where the lung immune system is pretty much left, you know, without much defense. And so when you encounter the microbe in real life, and the lung immune system is minimally effective, and you're only responding to certain aspects. So say the pertussis vaccine, you're only responding to, you know, a 3 or 4 antigens on that microbe. That may seem like a good thing. But it's actually not, because some of the antigens that are not in the vaccine are very highly necessary in order to form a brisk robust, long-lasting immune response. They're not even in the vaccine. Secondly, the vaccine creates more IgG4. If you know anything about IgG4, you know, allergy doctors love IgG4 because it actually suppresses, it's showing that they've actually suppressed the immune response. So for instance, say you're allergic to cat hair or dog hair and you keep getting those little injections to help give you tolerance. Well, that's how they know you've developed tolerance is you've developed this IgG4. So IgG is immune globulin, and there's 1, 2, 3, 4. There may even be more, but I know about 4. So 4 is one that comes up, and if you're predominantly or highly producing 4, you're essentially giving someone tolerance. So all these grandparents that are going and getting more and more pertussis vaccines, whooping cough vaccines, because their grandchildren are born and they're being bullied into it, and all these children that are getting more and more vaccines as they get older for, say, pertussis, they're basically developing tolerance to pertussis, which means they're not going to respond when they actually do encounter it. So it's actually counterproductive.
Yeah. The pertussis story is fascinating. We're actually putting ourselves at increased vulnerability of getting whooping cough, which gives us increased chance of taking it home to that newborn who's the one who's more at risk.
And the mutant strains are another really interesting story, because if we'd have just left it alone and let it circulate, it would have just kept circulating. The death rates were already going down. The newborn babies, it's just like with measles, the newborn babies were protected by the mother, and now they've screwed that all up with the vaccine. But the mutant strains have skyrocketed far more than with the measles vaccine. Pertussis mutants are completely out of control, and they're actually more virulent, more invasive, and more difficult to treat.
Yeah.
Because of the vaccine. And that's well known. That's not fringe tree-hugging lunatics here. This is in the medical literature.
Our pertussis story, it's a story of vaccine failure, and yet it's still on the market. It's just great and required for school attendance.
Well, so when a vaccine fails, you don't take it off the market. You just give more.
Here's more of this thing, because maybe it'll work next time. In our short time together, I wanted to touch a little bit on developmental delays, cognitive abilities, and then also what's in the vaccines, because I think there's a connection there between developmental delays, cognitive disabilities, and what's in the vaccines. What's your understanding of the prevalence of developmental delays, cognitive problems, focus issues, ADD, ADHD, autism? What's changed over the years, and how rapidly has that happened?
Well, I'm pretty sure that I saw the statistics in your book, so I know it's a rhetorical question. But wasn't it something like 1 in 10,000, something like 20 years ago? And now we've got something like, the last I looked, it was 1 in 6 with neurocognitive developmental disorders in children. 1 in 6, if you want to call it the spectrum.
That's, if you're going to add it all together, the autism, the ADD, ADHD, et cetera. Other developmental delays. This is not something I saw growing up as a kid. There were, I think I remember one kid my whole childhood who something wasn't right with them. And it's like you said, 1 in 6, 1 in 8, 1 in 10, whatever number we pick, it's everywhere. Who today doesn't know somebody who has a child who's struggling developmentally? So to pivot to your area of strength in terms of the knowledge you have from all your research, cover some of the most concerning toxins that are in vaccines and what makes this toxic, so that people maybe can understand why we need to really pay attention to this and perhaps just stay away from vaccines.
Well, I mean, I think the biggest elephant in the room is the aluminum. And if you understand what aluminum does in the body, that it does not have any normal biological functions in the body. There's no cellular metabolism. There's no immune response that requires aluminum. It's simply put in there as an irritant to cause an immune response. So we know that it's toxic to the brain. We know that it's supposed to be kept under sun. Remember, I read this in Neil Miller's book, something like, is it 4,000 micrograms or something like that? It might be milligrams, but I can't remember. But the childhood vaccination program has far surpassed that, especially when you add in the Gardasil vaccines. So the aluminum is probably the biggest elephant in the room. But then you have things, so this was relevant to me when I was researching vaccines for the first time, is that you have albumin, cow albumin in the vaccines, and also egg albumin, but bovine serum albumin is in the vaccines. And that is a real reactive particle, reactive molecule. And so if you were to add that, so that's already reactive in and of itself, and then you put aluminum in there at the same time, then you could potentially be setting somebody up for developing nephropathies, protein losing nephropathies, which as a pediatrician, you will agree that that's a really big problem in the pediatric population. It's this minimal change disease and focal and segmental glomerulosclerosis. So that was really relevant to me when I was researching vaccines. And I think answers a lot of my questions as to, you know, why are we seeing all this FSGS in children now? What's going on here? I think, you know, if you wanted to really cut down on kidney disease in the childhood population, just getting rid of the vaccines would do probably most of it. So there's that. And then, so you have to look at the killed vaccines versus the live viral vaccines, which do have different effects on the body. And so the live viral vaccines technically would be better if it weren't for all the other additives that are in there, like the sorbitol and, you know, the things that can cross the blood-brain barrier. So there's just not a one of them that has anything that could possibly promote health. And the problem is that the focus is always in, you know, ramping up the fear of disease, creating worse diseases by the treatments. This is another thing that's 225 years old, is that if physicians were allowed to treat and educated how to treat diseases, we wouldn't see the morbidity from the diseases. And then we wouldn't have the fear ramped up in order to get the public on board with it. Because everybody's terrified of measles encephalopathy. They're terrified of their child becoming crippled from polio. They're terrified of their child dying or becoming brain damaged from meningococcus. And those things are all preventable with some knowledge and as to how to treat a child, you know, every day, and then how to treat them when they're sick. And instead of that, the population has pretty much been deprived of proper treatments. And the bad outcomes are blamed on the anti-vaxxers and the stupid parents who didn't get their children vaccinated.
So a Parent's Guide to Healthy Children that CHD put out and is available for free covers an interesting point in this chapter that we were discussing briefly. And that is that the CDC, and I actually with the endorsement of the Academy of Pediatrics, has changed the developmental standards. And basically, especially in the area of language, you now don't have to have the same skill level to be considered normal. So the effect of that, I think, is a bit concerning for some of us in that we're going to detect problems later. And the longer it takes to get a child into early intervention, you know, it's a loss for them. But I also liked their deep cover of the vaccine ingredients. You know, parents, you read labels of what food you're putting into your children's mouths, as you should. Well, you need to know what's in your vaccines. I mean, Dr. Humphries, you mentioned polysorbate 80. It's used by researchers in the cancer world to get chemotherapy into the brain. So it messes up the blood-brain barrier so that you can get agents in there. What a wonderful thing to put in our vaccines. And the aluminum, of course, is used to trigger autoimmunity. If you want, as a researcher, to study autoimmunity, they give the rats a little bit of aluminum at levels that are in vaccines. So, I mean, this is really messing things up. They're finding glyphosate and antibiotics, neomycin, and even nanoparticles now, right, with our COVID lipid nanoparticles and messenger RNA nonsense. It's concerning. Did you have any other comments about the ingredients in vaccines?
Not so much that, but just to say that another 225-year-old repetitive nightmare is the changing of the goalposts, you know. So it's always changing the goalposts to make the vaccines seem successful, even if it is putting your highly functional child in with a mentally retarded child in the same classroom so that your child can't learn as well. And that child's not going to learn, but now neither children's going to learn very well, but they're both now going to be considered, you know, equal. And then so what happens is that you have all these nasty ingredients in vaccines, and for years the evidence has been there, right? So the new goalpost change is, as you mentioned, the messenger RNA vaccines. And so we now have a whole new terrain to look at, which is considered safe because now they are going to green our vaccines and grow them on tobacco plants and other plants. And they say that we're not going to have any of this problems with the animal contaminations or all these other things that we're talking about, because they're just going to be grown on tobacco. But what they don't tell us are all the molds and the fungus and the pitfalls that can happen with these vaccines that are grown on tobacco plants. What they don't tell us are all the horrible things that that we're finding out from geneticists right now, who are dissecting the plasmids that were in the vaccines. And so we're going to now forget. It's like we forget about, you know, the whole population just let John F. Kennedy's murder go to rest for a while and never really fully investigated it until a certain amount of time goes by. And now we're allowed to talk about it again and investigate it because it's irrelevant now in a certain way. And the same is going to happen with vaccines. Like, we're going to bury this aluminum stuff. We're going to bury the history, and we're going to carry on with a whole new set of vaccines that are supposed to be the bright new sunshine day for the population, because they can create them in a matter of weeks if for the next epidemic. And we already saw what happened with the shortened lifespan after the COVID vaccines were deployed. So you do the math on that.
So what's really scary about this, and you've alluded to it pretty clearly here, is this new technology, the messenger RNA technology, was a disaster for COVID. And yet the COVID jab is on the childhood schedule, and they are moving forward with the technology as if it was a great success. I see it as a massive disaster.
Yeah, they're all good. I think all the vaccines will soon be made that way. And there will be I'm pretty sure there won't be very much trialing of the new ones, because they'll just say what they always say. Well, we know that this one has been really safe. Remember Gardasil 1? It was so safe that we were able to double the aluminum content in it and release it as Gardasil 2 without really doing any research on populate. Post-market research is what's done, which is basically a big human trial experiment.
So I have reached the conclusion, and by the way, myself and Dr. Humphreys, we are not giving medical advice here. We are merely sharing information. You do your due diligence and run it by your trusted healthcare provider. But I've come to the point where I don't think it's a good idea to do any vaccine. How about you?
What I think is that I think it's not a good idea to do tyranny. And I think that if you have tyrannical governments dictating what has to be injected into anybody, that's always been a problem, whether you're talking about smallpox or COVID. The reason being that if parents do their due diligence, just like they do with everything else, and they discover in the end that they want to vaccinate their child, I'm not really okay with it, but in a political sense, I am okay with it, because that parent is the one that's going to be responsible for the outcome of that child. So if a parent gets educated, decides not to vaccinate their children, and you know, they may get some of the childhood diseases, then that's fine too. But what I think is that parents need to learn how to do background health in their children, how to do good nutrition, to have certain things in the household that they can use when their children get sick. The most important thing, in my opinion, when I give lectures, well, what do we do then? Talk to parents who have already done it. Talk to parents who have raised several children that are now 20 years old or older, and they never received a vaccine. How did they do it? How did they deal with illness? You know, what was their thinking like? Their panic, because parents, even though they choose not to vaccinate, they still get anxious about, well, what am I going to do when it comes? Oh, what if my child doesn't get measles? Then it's really a problem. So there are all these little things that come up that really do have to be addressed. And probably one of the biggest factors, which you can attest to, is that if you choose to not vaccinate your child, and for some reason your child ends up in a hospital, especially with a communicable disease, you are going to be really beat up by the medical system, and your child stands to receive every single vaccine that's on the schedule. So you have a lot to lose by something going wrong in that process. And that's another reason I think it's individual choice, no tyranny, education, informed consent.
Yep. No, you're absolutely spot on. I couldn't agree more. And, you know, if you choose not to vaccinate, and you and I both know, sounds like at least 1,000 families each, or at least 1,000 kids each. And they are the healthiest kids I've ever come across. It's like this, the lights are on. They're creative. They're inquisitive in a beautiful way. But those families are concerned about what happens if I need to go to the hospital. And what a lot of them are doing is connecting with a provider who understands their choices and will back them up. So they can't be accused of being neglectful and have Child Protective Services called on them, because they have a provider who will come to bat and say, no, we're there under my care. But it is so complicated. Absolutely. I want you to have the final word. Just what would you like our viewers to be aware of, as well as remind everybody where they can get your new amazing 10th anniversary edition of Dissolving Illusions?
Right. So the easiest way is to go to dissolvingillusions.com and look at our website, where you can get free information from the book, a few chapters there, the author's introductions, the color graphs and pictures from the book. And then there's two options. You can order from Amazon, or you can order from the private printing company that we've brought on board. And we now also have a limited edition signed copy of the 10th anniversary edition that's available as well for a short time. And then shortly after now, like, this will be available by within 1 week, you can get this book. It may be even be sooner than that. But we also have on deck a second very large book. I think it's now up to like 600 or 700 pages. And it's the companion book to Dissolving Illusions, which has a lot of the information that we would have loved to put into Dissolving Illusions, but there just wasn't enough space. And so old documents, many hundreds of quotes from doctors over 225 years who had horrible regrets and outcries over the damage that they had done giving vaccines, and why, and what they actually saw in terms of contagion and death, et cetera, after vaccinating. Because vaccination has always been a big profit model, that even when you talk about the smallpox vaccine from the beginning. So there's a lot of, like, when you read those quotes, that these are boots on the ground doctors from 220 years ago that blow you away, because it sounds just like us.
Yeah. So folks, I'm getting off the show and ordering my copy of both the new edition and the companion edition. And here's one reason. First, I already know this is a must-have resource based on owning your other book. But when you do internet searches these days, I don't know if people realize how scrubbed and censored the internet is. So I imagine a lot of the data and information in your companion book would be hard to find.
It will be. And it's really interesting, because in 2008, when we were just researching, you know, we'd just go on the internet and find everything. We had Neil Z. Miller's information. You know, everything was right. We had Dr. Mercola. It was all just right there. And it's either been scrubbed. Even my YouTube channel got disappeared because of a vitamin C talk that I had on there. Right. So, yeah. So we've been scrumped. So now we're on BitChute, or we're on Odyssey. If anyone's looking, because a lot of people, and this is important, a lot of people are still looking for my videos. They are all uploaded on my Odyssey channel. So just go to Dr. Suzanne Humphreys on Odyssey and you'll see them all. I'm not allowing them to take them away. It's really a different world from just 2008. That's not even that long ago. It's only 12 years ago.
Yep. Yeah, censorship is alive and well, and we need to preserve this vital information, because when you don't have good information, you can't make good decisions. So, Dr. Suzanne Humphreys, thank you so much for being on the show, and you do get the last word.
Well, I just want to thank you, and thank you for all you've done and what you're continuing to do. This is really, really wonderful. And I think your book is actually fantastic. And I often use it, believe it or not, because I do believe that when people are just waking up, they need a bridge. They're not just going to run to Humphreys and Bistrianic and become anti-vaxxers straight away. They need a bridge to kind of walk through and kind of start to understand. And you've been that bridge. You and Jennifer, you know, you were that bridge for a really long time. And you went through the bridge yourself, just like we all did, thinking, oh, there are still a few good vaccines. And then we get to the end of it, we go, rubbish. Rubbish. None of them.
And to that end, I have a new book coming out, Vax Facts, and that will be out this year, probably in the next 3 to 6 months. That will really finish the bridge.
Don't burn the bridge. No, maybe we should burn this one.
Yeah, no, it's. I like how you put it. People need informed consent. They need to have the option to make whatever decisions they want to make and live with the consequences of those decisions. And your book, your new book, along with my new book, Vax Facts, that'll come out in the next few months. The information's there, folks. So you just need to make sure you get it, so you're informed, and then you know how to proceed. So I want to thank everybody for watching. Again, thank you, Dr. Humphreys. You can check out my other show, With the Wind, at doctorsinscience.com. And you can also take a coaching session with myself, if you wish, at kidsfirstforever.com. Those links are in the show notes. Thank you for your time today, and I look forward to seeing you next week. Thank you. I look forward to running together with the wind at our backs, revealing the science that gives clarity in our world that's full of propaganda and misinformation. Visit our website, doctorsinscience.com. Sign up. Donate if you can. Your support makes a difference. And let's make this the weekly show the world has been waiting for. Thanks for watching. I'm Dr. Paul.